Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it was the FedEx Cup finale, the Tour Championship, the big money grab, and a man walked away $15 million richer. We get into all the highlights, plus everything we're tuned into outside the world of sports, and a recap of my first tailgate tour at Texas State University. It was a fun time, and we get into some NFL storylines for the season starting this weekend as well. This week's guest is a good one. We love talking TV news. We've got TV news reporter Danielle Garcia from Wink News in Southwest Florida on to talk about her life reporting and everything going on in the news in Florida. Plus, we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at City Bonfires. Michael, campfire season, Labor Day weekend. It's fall. It's time to break out the campfires, have the sweaters. You know, the weather cools down. Maybe get the football game on the radio or the TV outside. And I think you want to add a City Bonfire into that photo, that image I'm painting right now. It's a really cool, portable, reusable bonfire. Easy to light with a stick lighter. Easy to put out. Like I said, it's super portable. Gets the job done, gives you that nice little light of fire and ambiance that you need for any outdoor event. And don't forget the s'mores kits as well that come with them. They're all made in the U.S. Check out citybonfires.com, and our promo code is COLFIRE to save 10% off. Again, promo code COLFIRE to save 10% off your City Bonfire today.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, the PGA Tour cut a $15 million check to Patrick Cantlay, and you need to cut me a check because I picked him as the winner this week.
Congrats, yes. Nice
work. Cantlay, not the best golfer on the course, but good enough with that adjusted leaderboard to hold off John Rahm by one with a clutch birdie on 18. He just did enough to go all the way, and now he walks home as a FedEx Cup champion.
Yeah, the classic hole-off here in the Tour Championship that we're getting used to. You know what I mean? The guy in the number one seeding who's got that stroke advantage at the start of the week, using it to their advantage, doing exactly what you said, enough to win. And that's what Cantlay did. He was very impressive from start to finish. Maybe didn't have the lowest 72-hole aggregate score, but got it done when he absolutely needed to. The most clutch shot of all being that second shot on 18. Mike, John Rahm is one behind right next to him, hits his second right up near the hole. Cantlay answers with a six iron from like 215 yards, like 12 feet right of the hole, Mike. What way to make it really easy on yourself in a huge moment.
I wish I could hit my six iron 215 yards.
Ever, once, man. And put it somewhere in the vicinity of the green, let alone 10 feet away, when all you need to do is make four to win. That's exactly what he did on the last hole to get it done.
Yeah, and it was a battle those last couple holes. Cantlay kind of rode the roller coaster, birdie, bogey, birdie, to get himself there. John Rahm, just really probably the best player on tour this year in terms of being in the hunt in almost every tournament he was in, COVID or not.
Yes.
He seemed to always be there, and just seemed to hang around. Did Rahm deserve to win this tournament? And that's a good question here. Was Rahm really the one who deserved to be the FedEx Cup champion this season?
Yeah, it's that Xander Schauffele conversation we had a couple years ago where the same thing happened. Schauffele had far and away the best week at East Lake, but it wasn't enough because of the aggregate scoring. So, you know, I mean, he feels just kind of burnt at every corner. He got that U.S. Open win, which was so pivotal to as kind of the cornerstone of his 2021 campaign. Because everywhere else, I feel like John Rahm was just getting burnt left and right with close calls. Like at every event you can imagine, like John Rahm was in the mix, had an opportunity here in the back nine on Sunday or the 18th hole on Sunday or in a playoff. And just, it's funny, for the amazing year he had, I still feel like he left the most out there of the top players in the world.
Yeah, he really did. I think you're right. He certainly seems to have the quote unquote most missed opportunities this season.
Yeah.
And Patrick Cantlay just seemed to do everything he needed to do at the right times.
Definitely.
This season.
Huge for Cantlay.
And as we said, Cantlay may not have had the lowest aggregate score. Rahm did have the lowest aggregate score, but not by himself. That was shared by our boy, Kevin Na, who just like, I feel like he came out of nowhere here and just like teed it up and went ahead and walked in some putts. And he also went ahead and had the lowest aggregate score, 266 strokes over the weekend.
I love that. Yes, I didn't realize that Na tied Rahm there in that scenario. And one of the funnier moments of Sunday is, Mike, you know, you say you don't think about it as a pro golfer, and especially when you're the world's best and you make it to East Lake, you already kind of know you're in line for a big check. But you maybe don't think about how big it is when it gets until it gets late on Sunday afternoon. So Kevin Na was strolling down the 18th and realized that smartly, you know, let me think about, okay, so 15 million to first, 5 million to second, I think it's 3 point something million to third. I've got two putts right here for third. I'm going to be real, real careful on my first putt. And he lagged it down and kind of gave everyone a wink and a laugh, just making sure he secured that third place check to wrap up another solid campaign for our boy Kevin Na. I thought that was a funny moment.
Yeah, I was texting a friend of mine about Kevin Na's performance, and he was like, Kevin Na's going to win a major one day. And I was like, you know, maybe, but he's 37. Let's not forget, Kevin Na's been on tour since 2001. He's been around the block a couple times. What do we think we're in Kevin Na renaissance? I mean, we've been riding him the last couple of years. I feel like we've seen him more on leaderboards. What are the chances of Kevin Na winning a major before he turns 40?
I wish there was one coming in the next 30 days, because we get him at maybe like 40 to 50 to 1 odds or something like that. But every time these major championships come around, he seemingly has invisible form or just completely lacking, and he's going off at like 100 to 1. He barely makes the cut or something like that. So we'll have to see if he can carry it over the spring, but for now I think he's gonna relax and enjoy a little off season with his winnings.
Yeah, I think now's the time to relax for the guys on tour. It's time for me to relax because I got my fourth winner of the season in Patrick Cantlay and my picks. Been a great first year doing picks on this podcast. I don't know why I didn't start this years ago.
So. I'm glad you invested. You just put a little $20 bill my way, and we've been chipping away week by week. And you're still making out a little bit of profit on that money that we've been holding on to for a long time now. So congrats on your fourth win. I got four myself. And we'll keep it rolling into the fall here. Mm-hmm. Our picks are weekly on Twitter at Course of Life 1, myself, and you're at MWRINC.
Let's talk about that other tournament that was going on this weekend, which has kind of eclipsed the PGA Tour this weekend. May not have been our lead, but it probably should have been. The only reason why it's not is because it's currently 4:30 on a Monday afternoon on the East Coast, and it's still happening. But the Solheim Cup is certainly just taking the golf world by storm right now. Doesn't look good for Team USA.
Yes, unfortunately, right, we are going to make the executive decision. We're going to call it here live on our recording that unfortunately the United States came up short. So if there's some unforeseen comeback, then sorry, you're going to have to edit this in the middle of your night, Mike. But regardless, an impressive performance by Team Europe, and Leona Maguire has to be shouted out, the Solheim Cup rookie with, I think, 4.5 points. In her first Solheim Cup ever. That is super gutsy for the Irish woman. And we've been saying that Lady Golf's had a fantastic year, and this has been the culmination of it with Nelly Korda's run, the Olympic gold medal leading into the Solheim Cup. Would have liked to seen the Americans come through and get that team victory with everyone kind of who was there, who'd been so great in women's golf on the American side. But I really, really love the vibes out of the Solheim Cup. This kind of snuck up in me on the calendar a little bit, Michael. Mm-hmm. I wanted to give it a little bit more pregame and preview than it did, but I'm glad it sat where it did on Labor Day weekend, because it was a fun watch indeed.
Yeah, it's kind of a good time to have it, and it certainly seemed to sweat. Take everything away from the FedEx Cup. Once again, the FedEx Cup finale just can't do anything. Again, East Lake, not the right venue for it. But the Solheim Cup had everything going for it in this year of really women's golf taking off. And it had the best cheerleader of them all for Team USA in Bubba Watson.
Yes, that's right. I saw Bubba was rapping. He was boosting up the crowd with drives and just been a great influential figure, not only for the game of golf, but also for the women's game. He's been particularly himself a really big ambassador, and that's shining through this week. There's, you know, dancing on the first tee at the Solheim Cup. There's all sorts of great outfits and accessories going on with Team USA and Team Europe. I'm going to say it, Mike, you know, you and I are huge Ryder Cup fans, but there's something very uniquely special about the Solheim Cup where it, yes, the competition is there and the level of I want to beat you and you want to beat me is absolutely there, but there's just something really fun and playful and enjoyable about the Solheim Cup with it being an intense team competition as well.
Yeah, I think this year, especially, I feel like if I had to choose one of these to go to, I'd want to go to the Solheim over the Ryder Cup.
There's a little hot take. I like that.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, and I mean, it was Inverness was a really cool venue. Daniel Kang had won there, and the first tournament's back after COVID in the LPGA last year. So it's a venue that's close to the tour as well, and it came through. Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits is going to be nice in a few weeks as well, too. That's a really cool venue. Shout out to my buddy and our mutual friend David, who got to play there a few weeks ago, Mike. He said the wind was howling at Whistling Straits. He had some drives that almost started coming backwards at him. That's how much the wind was howling out there. So if that's any indication to what the Ryder Cup could be like in a few weeks, it could be an entertaining watch.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who Steve Stricker picks as his final captain's picks on Wednesday of this week, which means we're going to make some predictions, and by Wednesday, we're going to be wildly inaccurate.
Yes, that's right. I wanted to throw this out there just because we already know the top six, and by the time most of you hear this on Wednesday, Captain Stricker will have made his selections for the rest of the 12. Let's see if we can lay that 12 out. Mainly, I'm talking about who is 7 through 12 on the standings, Mike. I'm just going to run the names down for you, and I want to ask you if you're looking to maybe shuffle someone in or out on the list after the six that have qualified. At number 7, we got Tony Finau, 8, Xander Schauffele, 9, Jordan Spieth, 10, Harris English, 11, Patrick Reed, and 12, Daniel Berger. Is there anyone you're looking to maybe move out of there? Do you see anyone kind of supplanting into the top 12 and getting the pick from Stricker?
Well, first of all, I just want to throw out there that there's a chance. I'm curious to see if Brooks Koepka is going to be on the team after withdrawing.
Yeah, I don't think so. That was a wrist injury that did not look good. It was a tree limb, Mike. So he could be in doubt as well. So we might be looking down the list even further, actually.
That's right. And I'm just going to throw out there that if there's one guy in this top six I don't want playing, it's Colin Morikawa. He really has not finished the season very strong. Let's just throw that out there, too. You never know what's going to happen. But, but I mean, definitely we just said his name earlier, Kevin. Nah, how can you not pick him right now with the form he's had over the last couple of weeks? I think he needs to be on this Ryder Cup team. His performance this weekend was phenomenal in the pressure, doing the smart things, like we said on 18, knowing where he was and what he had to do. I think Kevin Nah needs to be on this team. Also, just for his personality and walking in putts. How do you not want someone like him walking in putts?
Yeah, there's a few interesting names at 18, 19, and 20, Mike. Another Kevin I'm going to bring up who we've talked about before in this role is Kevin Kisner, who won at Wyndham. He has won the Dell Match Play. He's got a phenomenal record in his one match play experience. I believe it was a President's Cup. This is a guy I would like to see as a dog out there fighting for Team USA. He'd be a great personality to bring the locker room together as well, too. And then spot number 20, Mike, listen, I know he's over the hill, but if you're looking for someone to kind of bring the group together, Phil Mickelson sits there. It is highly unlikely, but it is not impossible that Steve Stricker gives him a spot. You just never know. I'm not sure who that supplants. Maybe Daniel Berger's on the hot seat, but that's TBD.
I mean, I don't think Phil's going to be an assistant captain and be playing on the team. This isn't Tiger Woods here or anything like that. So
that was the first thing I tweeted at him when I saw that announcement. He said he was going to be assistant captain. I said, oh, so you're still playing too, right? You're going to be there.
I don't think it's happening. Of course, the one we always have been wanting to see in the Ryder Cup, I don't think it's going to happen based on his form in the second half of the season, Will Zalatoris. I mean, we just would love to see him on the Ryder Cup team.
Yes, still Corn Ferry Tour member, I think. I don't think he's like still quite literally been handed that PGA Tour card yet, which is the stupidest storyline in golf. But nonetheless, that would have been fun to see him climb the ranks in the top 12. But I think the opportunity's passed for Zalatoris.
I mean, looking at the rest of the names on here, no one else really jumps out at me. I wish Stuart Sink was still playing well. He did really poorly at the Tour Championship this weekend. But just in terms of someone with the experience and knowledge who's had a kind of a renaissance this season, you got to think that if you're going to pick one other person outside of there, it's Stuart Sink. And if you want to have a cheerleader, I guess Bubba Watson could be in that top.
We could move
him up from spot 33 in the standings and put him in there, too.
He's the international team competition cheerleader officially for U.S. golf. Mm-hmm. So those are our thoughts. I think really our thoughts are, let's get one of the Kevins in as a captain's pick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's just get one of them in and see what happens.
How about both? Let's do both. Let's do it.
Love it.
Why not?
Yeah.
I like it. We'll be watching that in, that's really in like 2 weeks, I think it is. So we'll see what's going on there. There is no tournament this week, really. I think we take a week off. Season's over.
We actually take a breather. You're not going to believe this. There's not a PGA Tour event this week. You don't get to say that very often. There's like a brief period around Christmas when you get to say that. And this is the only other week of the year. So yes, they do have a week off. We'll talk Napa next week as we circle the calendar. And then remember, we have our Korn Ferry friends making it out onto the PGA Tour starting next week. So Dylan Wu, all sorts of guys getting starts in the fall, hopefully.
That's right. And also, let's not forget the LPGA Tour still has a couple events, including another major going on. So
good times. And then the European Tour, I got to shout out the Italian Open. I mentioned it last week. Mm. And Rasmus Højgaard, the name I keep shouting out, who's gotten 3 wins on the European Tour at age 20. Breaking news, Mike. Rasmus Højgaard not only has a twin brother that I never knew existed, his twin brother just won on the European Tour this past weekend.
Oh my.
We've got dueling Højgaard brothers that are now both European Tour champions. So exciting to see them embrace after the win there from Nikolaj. And a couple of dual forces. Ryder Cup 2023. Well, maybe both of them on the team. How about the two of them? Now we have a two-headed monster for Team Europe, as if they weren't dominant enough, right?
That's interesting. Do the Højgaards have a third sibling who plays another sport really well? Are they looking to challenge the Kordas for supremacy family of sports?
Yeah, by next week's episode, we're going to find out that there's a little sister that they're grooming as well, too, for LPGA probably dominance soon. Love that.
One other question you made me think about, I saw this somewhere that would be really interesting, which was something I saw thrown out there on Twitter about making the President's Cup a mixed event. And make it men and women playing together. It is like, why aren't we? We talked about this, that the Olympics needed this. They needed to have a mixed event for golf. It would be awesome to have a mixed team event. Why, you know, this is, I think right now the LPGA Tour has so much momentum, but to continue to grow the game, they have to do this.
That I think this has to happen. Such a cool idea. I saw that was a pretty half-baked tweet from, I think, Joel Beal, who sent that out regarding putting them both together. But I actually seriously love it. You know, it's funny. Yeah. There was a scene at the Solheim Cup, Mike, where there were only 4 matches going off in any given period, as you know, since it's only 8 guys out there, 4 matches, 8 women out there. And a match got to the 10th tee and the stands were completely empty because the fans had gravitated to the other 3 matches for whatever reason. But there's room on the golf course to make that happen, potentially have both of them going on at the same time. Fun food for thought for the future of the game.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. We'll keep an eye on all of it. And our picks will not be up on Wednesday, so don't look for them. It's not going to happen.
That's right. No picks. Correct.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, though, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I know some new music dropped for you, and you're all over that right now.
Yes, I am. I'm pulling out my phone because I'm going to tell you about the hip new reference that Drake made to the PGA Tour and golf. That's right. My rapper Drake came out with the highly anticipated album this past week, dropped it with a lot of enthusiasm, and I was shocked to see that he had a Tiger Woods reference in there. I'll read you the lyric in the moment where golf has never sounded cooler in our entire existence. The exact Drake lyric was, "Think I'm Tiger Woods the way I'm teed off of 17. Like that. Nice little TPC Sawgrass reference there. Second line, "And you know, pockets on whatever, jeans forever green." Now, I don't entirely get that line, but I know he was going for just green. I don't know if he was going for green jacket or green of a golf course. Regardless, I'm just happy that Drake shouted out Tiger Woods in the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass. Not something I ever thought I would say.
Yeah, you know, it's good though.
It was fun. It was fun to see the Drake PGA Tour shout out. Good album. Enjoy listening to it. Never really been a huge Drake fan, but this is a good kind of R&B listen. If you're in my age bracket and you kind of like the older hip hop stuff from maybe 10, 20 years ago, you'll definitely want to listen to Drake's recent release as well.
There we go. For me, I switched off from everything on Friday. And we've got some friends over for the holiday weekend. And that meant we went kayaking once again and got to explore what's known as the Boneyard out on Little Tybee Island here in the Savannah area, which just a bunch of dead trees, but just beautiful area. Put some pictures up on my Instagram. So if you're not following me there, MWRINC, really awesome site, you know. And it was a lot of fun to be out on the water, just kind of relax a little, have to worry about anything.
What I love about kayaking is you get the feeling, and you do actually get kind of the workout. You know, you get the feeling as if you're getting an exercise, but you're also going at just kind of a nice, modest enough speed that you can actually just take a look around and just smell the roses and look at the birds and enjoy your day. So it's just kind of a nice balance activity. Yeah.
That said, it was some very rough seas out there.
Oh man, you had some chop out there.
it was a lot of chop. Waves are coming over the sides of the kayak. It was a little crazy, but still, it was just fine. I'm getting the hang of it. It's fine.
Good stuff. Awesome.
Let's get into this week's featured guest.
Yes.
Alex, both of us have a background in TV news production from our time at Quinnipiac. we'll kind of boast that.
Oh, yes.
And make it bigger than it really
back,
is.
Mike. I mean, this is not only the radio show, talking about the newspaper. I remember producing some newscasts with you back in the day. Well, we've done all that fun stuff.
We did. And that means we also love to hear from different journalists around the world. And this week, we're taking a little vacation to Southwest Florida.
Oh, yes. My favorite part. One of my favorite parts of the country. You know, I love going down there. We had a fun golf trip down there as well, too.
We did.
And this week's guest, Danielle Garcia, is a reporter down there talking about life in Southwest Florida, all the cool stuff she eats, the places she goes, and just the craziness of reporting in Florida. You kind of know what the news is like in Florida, right? So she gets into just kind of what that all entails.
We'll get into this conversation with Danielle. But first, as always, want to let you know this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around the dark spaces of your golf cart, dropping your phone on the seat, or even worse, onto the grass as you drive away. The Phone Caddy keeps you locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round. It'll be the talk of your foursome and a gift for any golfer in your life. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a Phone Caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your Phone Caddy. And don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com.
Next up, we love to have different media personalities from our world join the podcast. And it's no secret that I love vacationing and spending time in Southwest Florida. Next up, we have a news reporter for Wink TV, the CBS affiliate in Fort Myers, Florida, who covers it all down there. It's Danielle Garcia joining us on The Course of Life. Danielle, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
Definitely. Yeah. I did a lot of research on your background. I know obviously seeing you on winknews.com every day, anyone can stream the news broadcast and see where you report around Southwest Florida. But one thing that you and I have in common is we both spent a little bit of time working for ESPN. Was it at the Bristol, Connecticut campus where you were? Because I spent about a year myself there.
Yes. Yes. I was in Bristol. I was a summer intern my junior year going into senior year of college. And it was the most fulfilling experience. It was honestly so interesting. And it's funny because I like sports. Like, I love watching them. And my dad is an avid sports fan of literally every single sport, anything you name it, and he loves it. But I kind of got into it. I did the corporate citizenship internship. So basically everything with the ESPYs, anything that is kind of like communications, marketing with ESPN as on the philanthropy side, I was doing. So not so much actually broadcasting, but they let us go on all their shows to kind of shadow. And it was really, really cool. I met Greeny and a bunch of really cool people there.
Nice. So did you get the itch there or did you kind of have it in your mind before, you know, taking that role or that internship that you wanted to do something in broadcasting? At what point did that kind of form for you?
Yeah, actually, by then I already knew that I wanted to do broadcasting, which is why I set my sights on ESPN. Obviously, the worldwide leader, that's an incredible goal to fulfill. But really, I first realized I wanted to do broadcasting when I was in my sophomore year of college. I was going to Loyola, New Orleans, and I took a journalism class. I was actually a PR major at the time, and I fell in love with it. And then that summer, I got an internship at Telemundo Network in Miami, back home. And I worked on a Spanish kind of like fun news show called Arrojo Vivo. And it was a really fun experience. And I got to work with a lot of big network people that I still come across every day whenever I'm doing like a really big story. Like I recently was in Surfside, unfortunately, but there I still meet some people along the way, even when I was covering the Cuban crisis. So a lot of good contacts. And then from there, I just kept going and going and got an internship like almost every semester in college.
Very cool. Awesome. Yeah, I love that background in New Orleans as well, kind of where things started for you and where you went to school. Now, I'm curious, you love posting a lot of food on your social media. It's at Danielle C. Garcia on Instagram. Did you know when you got to school in New Orleans, being from Florida, did you know you were at such a great food city? Or how long did it take to discover the amazing restaurants there?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I grew up going to New Orleans. Credit to my dad. He loved New Orleans. He bought an apartment there the month before Katrina hit in 2005.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Fortunately, our apartment didn't get hit. We were in the Marigny, which is a great part of town, very close to Frenchman Street, which is where all the live music is. And so every year we went there a couple times a year. We would actually make the road trip up, me and my siblings, my parents, and my dogs. We would drive up there. So we spent a lot of time up there. My dad made a lot of connections with musicians and restaurant owners. I don't know how, because he talks more than I do. So I guess that's what he does.
Nice.
And so I fell in love with the city there and all the good food, which probably wasn't in my favor, because people talk about the freshman 15. And when I tell you, it's probably more like the freshman 50. It was insane how much food and how much alcohol you consume. But it was all for the best, because I met some really great people and made some really good connections. And yes, as you mentioned, that is where my love of broadcast was born.
Nice. Yeah, really, really could be a dangerous city. You're right. So impressed you made it out as successfully as you did. Nice work there. Talk to me about your recent trip that I saw to New Orleans. You were posting a bunch of cool seafood photos, but you got some massive oysters. I'm curious where it was and where's the go-to spots for you for seafood in New Orleans?
Yeah. So really, oh my God, everywhere in New Orleans has great food. It's just so hard to pick one. That picture you're talking about was Superior Seafood, which in college we love because it has really great happy hours. So each oyster is like 75 cents or a dollar or something like that.
Love
so
that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And New Orleans oysters are freaking massive. They are like the size of my face. But everywhere in New Orleans has great seafood. And when you talk about seafood, you have to do po' boys. I do a fried oyster po' boy. Best charbroiled oysters, which is like with butter and garlic, is probably Drago's. Acme's is great. I really just like love all food. So I can sit here and talk about food for hours.
Absolutely. And speaking of Acme, they did create one. It's not quite the same. They have a Houston, Texas location, which I was able to get to a few weeks ago and had those char-grilled oysters. It's totally worth it. Worth every single penny. That's a great dish too. And one other thing that I noticed seafood wise that you posted was crawfish. Now, this is something that was a foreign concept to me completely. We were growing up in New England, but when I moved to Texas, I quickly learned that crawfish boils were a big thing down here. I learned how to twist them, snap the head, that whole thing. I'm curious, what's your skill level unearthing the meat on those crawfish?
Well, actually pretty great, because like I said, I grew up going there, but also my dad fell in love with it so much that he would literally order live crawfish from New Orleans, learned how to boil them himself, and would hold crawfish boils at either our house or growing up. He also had like a music club venue in Miami, which is where I'm from. And so we would have a lot of those. And then obviously I went to school in New Orleans and we had crawfish boils. Like I probably had crawfish boils once a week. And then after New Orleans,
awesome.
I know. And then after New Orleans, I worked in Lafayette for 2 years, which is 2 hours west of New Orleans. And talk about good crawfish. It is even better than New Orleans. And I know I'm going to have people from New Orleans coming at my neck, but it is so good. And most of the crawfish farmers are actually in that neck of the woods, which is like Acadiana. So I'm pretty fast. However, my stepsisters who are from New Orleans, even faster. They are absolute beasts. One of them can probably take off a crawfish head and eat it in like 0.2 seconds.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
I feel like I would love to spend some time with your dad. He sounds like an absolute treat. And he's a crawfish boss as well too. That's good to know. Great company indeed. Obviously a great man to teach you the legends of how to take the crawfish apart correctly. In Florida, now where you are, I know there's a lot of seafood as well too. When I go there on vacation, I love having lots of different crab dishes and conch fritters. The stone crabs are a fun seasonal delicacy I've had a few times before. What are your favorite things now to eat now that you're in Florida full time?
Scallops are my absolute fave, and I know that's pricier, but I will splurge any day of the week for scallops.
Yes.
I also love cod, which is not really like a southern thing, but also get that a lot. And let's see. I love all whitefish. I don't know. There's so much yellowtail, which is always good and fresh here. And I'm actually going to a seafood restaurant like tomorrow that's on Fort Myers Beach. That's really good. I forget the name of it, but it's near Marine Max. Oh, and they have the best. It's like make your own fish dish, and it's really cool. But I eat it all. I eat shrimp. There's just so much good seafood. And that's where I think I've like just like kept on gravitating towards like seafood places. Like when I was in Connecticut, being in a landlocked area where I was in Bristol was very hard because like,
yeah, the struggle is real out there. If you're looking for great seafood, I'm not going to lie. You got to get real close to the coast near Boston where I grew up to get the good stuff. And you know that too.
I know. And I'm actually a pescatarian, so I don't eat meat. So, and it's not a vegetarian because I eat seafood. It's something I've been doing since I was like 12 years old. But so being in that part was very hard because all it is like barbecue and animals that I can't eat.
Yeah, you've put yourself in some good positions though with New Orleans and Florida now. So nice work on that. Works perfectly for the lifestyle. I love it. So yeah, like I mentioned, home base is Fort Myers, Southwest Florida. Talk to me about the experience so far at Wink News for yourself. I know you bounced around, but they've been there for the last year or two now. It, obviously, you mentioned, has it closer to your family, your father inspired you to kind of get into broadcasting as it is. So what's it been like to kind of be back in Florida the last year or two closer to your family now?
Yeah, honestly, it's been a lifesaver being here. Really, I love Southwest Florida for the beaches. Funny, because in Miami, where I grew up, I rarely went to any Miami beaches. It was always, we would come to Marco Island in Southwest Florida, or we would come to Sarasota.
Yes, my favorite spot.
Exactly. So we would never really go anywhere in the beach in Miami. And so here I go to the beach like every weekend, and that's why I love it. But also, yeah, like you hit it on the nose, was being close to family. Unfortunately, my father, as great as he was, passed away 2 years ago. And so being, I came close to be closer to him. And that has been great, just being able to pick up and go 2 hours west to Miami and, you know, just be with some family whenever I need it most, which is really great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Awesome. I'm definitely going to touch on more of the time you spend with your family as well too. And we'll talk beach a little bit later, but I want to talk first about what you cover on a daily basis in Southwest Florida, because it's a lot. You have a lot to deal with for people who don't know or who aren't tuned into the region. But first and foremost, we have to talk about covering the storms. There are some crazy hurricanes that have been all over Southwest Florida in your tenure here at Wink News, and you've had a chance to be right on the front lines of many of them. Put us in your shoes. We're watching you on TV wondering how these reporters get through these crazy stand-ups in the middle of a hurricane. What's it like in your shoes covering those storms?
Man, yeah, you know, we always say, you know, you talk about, I put myself in a good position for food. Well, I also put myself in a good position for hurricanes, Louisiana, yes. Florida, both. But here, you know, when people watch TV, they don't realize how much we go through. You know, we have to be plugged into on our phones and to be able to like talk back to the booth, but our phones can't get wet. So we have to like have them in our pocket, but then when you take them out and you go to touch it, it doesn't work. And then you can't get your camera equipment wet. And then you're there in the flood water and you're telling people don't go out on the road, but we're there out in the road trying to tell people what's going on outside. It's pretty insane. I would say that the craziest one I actually covered in recent memory is Ada, which is funny because a lot of people kind of forget about it. But Ada wasn't supposed to be that big of a storm, but it had a really bad flooding impact after. And I went live like 13 times in the course of like 12 hours or 11 hours. And I just had water to my thighs and went home and my fingers and toes were raisins. And the wind was just whipping me in the face. And usually we don't like to go live out in storms on a normal day. But of course, when it's storm coverage, you're only there to go live in storms. So it's a big struggle because technology, you have to keep it safe because it's very expensive, but you also need to do your job, which is deliver the news, deliver the facts, and tell people what's going on to keep them safe. So it's a really important job. And I think that covering a storm is one of the best experiences for me, honestly, because you get so close to your community and so many people appreciate your job at that point. A couple of weeks later, they might forget about that, but it's always really nice, despite all the hardships you see and you witness, but being able to help someone, you know, rescue an animal or be there to help them reunite with family. I was there in Louisiana when Harvey hit Texas. And one of the most emotional things was being at the reunion center and being there with a mother who couldn't find her kids and finally being there when she did. So yeah, it's a big experience and it's a heavy weight to hold, but it's an interesting time.
It is, to say the least. Yeah, so you came into Wink a couple of years ago, and obviously our world got kind of flipped upside down the spring of 2020. Talk to me about what it's been like, you know, reporting. Obviously, you've been on the front lines of these storms that have been going on during a pandemic as well, the last year and a half, and how your job evolved in the last year, year and a half, maybe what it's taught you about being a reporter.
Yeah, honestly, I'm so thankful we haven't had a major hurricane hit while we've been in lockdowns, like in my area. Because I don't know what on earth we would do. But everyone always says, you know, COVID is very, very important and you have to be safe. But when a hurricane hits, you know, precautions kind of come second at that point, because safety and getting someone out of a flood is the priority. But thankfully, we haven't had to deal with that. But honestly, COVID, just taking it outside of hurricane season, has been flipping our world upside down. You know, we do television news, so we get people on the air in person. We interview them. Here, we've had to do everything on Zoom, just like everybody else. And unfortunately, the environment has become pretty hostile. You know, at one county meeting or a school board meeting, I know I wasn't there, but one of our coworkers, they had to have security. We've had to have security come to our station once before. So it's gotten a little hostile, but I mean,
yes.
Reporting on COVID period has been really sad and emotional and mentally exhausting. I know everybody watching is mentally exhausted. So you can only imagine being the person having to be the bearer of bad news every single day. It's really hard. And talking to the doctors that are crying and saving the patients and talking to the families who are losing their loved ones, like it just really wears on you. It really, really does. But
definitely,
you know, we keep.
Yeah, no, but we can definitely tell. And through the broadcast, your resilience is shining through. You've definitely been a pro through it all, I've noticed. And one moment that we have to shout out where things did get a little too emotional, as you said, was you're reporting on a recent county meeting regarding mask mandates. And basically, you had a crazy aggressive mom just kind of yell fake news right in front of the camera while you were reporting. But what I really took away from it, and I complimented you on this immediately, was your composure through the whole thing. It struck me and it really seemed to resonate with a lot of people. The clip kind of went viral and circulated with a lot of people in news media as well. What was kind of going through your mind in that moment? And I'm sure you were just kind of trying to power through, but what was the thought process for you?
Man, yeah, it was actually a school board meeting. So they were all parents. So when you take that into account, parents with their kids there watching for everyone to see, and they do something crazy, stupid like that, you're just like, what are you thinking? But in the moment, I have to be professional and say, ma'am, I didn't even get a chance to say anything to her after, which I wish I would have, but I'm glad I didn't, because I don't think it would have been nice.
I was wondering if you got that chance, but yeah, I figured don't even worry about it.
You know, my bosses were actually watching me on like the live broadcast feed that's like only private through the screen of the station and me. And they saw me going to the door and they were like, Danielle, do not. So I in the moment, I was so focused on getting my words out about what I was reporting on, which was COVID and how bad it's gotten here. You know, Florida in general has been hit really bad, but Lee County here, we have it pretty rough. You know, right now, today, we have about 600 patients in the hospital. That's what, a 1,500 bed hospital. So it's a lot here. But the parents got pretty emotional, as I said in that clip. And we deal with that a lot, though, unfortunately. I haven't had that in a live shot. It happened to me before, but we've had a lot of people say really nasty things to us during this time, which is kind of disheartening, but you kind of just power through and keep doing your job and keep delivering the facts, because eventually they're going to need you and they're going to realize that, hopefully.
Definitely. I appreciate you maintaining that composure, and I'm glad people got to see it as well. We shared the clip on our Instagram at COL Podcast by the time this interview is out. Again, we're chatting with Danielle Garcia. It's Danielle C. Garcia with two N's as well, too, on Instagram. You can catch her on winknews.com if you're outside the Southwest Florida market and you want to watch her reporting. Like I said, you are a big beach fan, now that you've gotten to Southwest Florida. So let's take it to the beach for our last few questions here. Mm-hmm. You post a lot of really cool beach ball outdoor drink settings. So I'm curious, what's like your favorite go-to beach drink these days? I've seen the Palomas and the margaritas and always the classic mimosa is a good answer, but I'm curious what's your favorite right now?
That's a tough one. I think I like anything with like cucumber and berries in it, honestly. I know I probably don't post it as much, but I love a good like cucumber with seltzer and vodka in it, which is always my favorite. But There's this one bar called The Cottage on Fort Myers Beach that I love going to because it's like right on the sand. And I always get like a margarita from there. Their margaritas are pretty good. I think other than the cucumber drink, it's definitely a margarita just because it's like a classic. It's easy. I don't have to think about it. I'm just like, margarita, please. Yep.
Easy order for sure. And the other thing I had to comment on is food on the beach. I can't quite figure this mystery out. And I'm sure you may have an opinion on it as well too, but you definitely are an advocate of awesome meals on the beach as well too. I just went on vacation with my wife a couple months ago and we had like some amazing beach pizza and it was just like quite a vibe. I'm just curious, like what's the mystery behind that and why does food on the beach just taste that much better?
It's just like the view and you're in this like great mood. And so like, I think just like your elevated like vibe is just everything you eat on the beach is always good. Unless you go to like the trashiest restaurant, but like for the most part, everything is so good. Like a good conch fritter, like you said, chef's kiss, my favorite.
Yes.
Love a good conch fritter.
Indeed. So I'm curious for the people that are looking to visit the area or haven't been to Southwest Florida. Typically, when I take the visitors here in Austin, Texas, we got to get some Texas barbecue or see a UT football game or go somewhere on the Greenbelt and check out nature. When you've got visitors in town, whether it's a couple or some girlfriends or something like that, what are like the go-to stops or beaches that people have to hit when they're in Southwest Florida?
So absolutely, I love to take them to Sanibel Beach because that is the most serene, beautiful spot for shelling. I also love Marco Island, but that's a little bit more of a trek away from Fort Myers. We have so many good beaches, but I would say Sanibel definitely is my favorite. And then I like to take people to the Luminary Hotel downtown in Fort Myers. That's new. They have a great rooftop bar and great drinks there.
Nice.
See, there's just so much.
Love a good rooftop bar.
I know. It's like one of our first ones here, honestly. Everything is just very low here. I don't know why, but there's like not really any high rises. So we don't really have a lot of rooftops here. But those are my favorites. Those are definitely my go-tos. I'd have to think a little bit more on where else I take people.
Now, that's definitely a good array for sure. I'm excited to get back there soon.
Oh, yeah.
I know for the golfers out there, I interviewed the general manager at Pop Stroke, which is a really cool like mini golf fused bar restaurant concept in Fort Myers, which is a fun place to check out as well too. So there's lots to check out in Southwest Florida, and we're definitely looking forward to checking out your reporting on Winged News. Again, Danielle Garcia, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life with us, and look forward to seeing more of your stories as well.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm sure your listeners will be super happy to hear that our Topgolf is also opening up soon. I drive by it every day and they've made so much progress. I think they're opening up this fall. So that's going to be really fun. I'm very excited for that because you don't have to be a good golfer for that, which is good.
Exactly. That's a great time. Always love a good Topgolf night. Mm-hmm. Cheers, Danielle.
All right. Thank you so much.
And we're back. Great chat there with Danielle Garcia, keeping the Karens off the screen, keeping her composure. And, you know, I love to see the professionalism even after the camera's off and she's not running after them to really give them a piece of her mind, because that certainly is something that I would do.
I would have been tempted to do the same thing. So I'm impressed by her poise in the moment to not go after that lady. We'll post that clip on our Instagram at COL Podcast. I'm at Course of Life Alex and you're at MWR. And see if you want to see more clips from Danielle as well this week. But that was funny to hear her document that. Yeah, always a fun time reporting in Florida. You never know what you're quite in for, whether it's a Karen or a COVID headline or a hurricane hitting your face as well too. So she really covers the full gamut out there. But it was cool to go on that little vacation, little food trip as well too to New Orleans, which was fun to talk Cajun food. But yeah, I'm looking forward to get down to Florida as well too. So I'll see her on Wink News myself. But thanks to Danielle for being on.
We're going to have to do a Course of Life field trip sometime soon.
Yes,
it's in the cards. It's in the cards. Let's turn our attention to football. Labor Day weekend is over. The Tour Championship is over. The FedEx Cup is over. That means it's time to talk the NFL. The season starts this week. And for your Patriots, Alex, That means everything we talked about on Monday about this being who's it going to be, Cam Newton or Mac Jones, is over because Tuesday morning, Cam Newton was cut.
Like, what? Are you serious? Yeah. That blew my mind. Of course, that goes with our never-ending streak of huge news dropping on Tuesday morning after we've recorded, but before our episode's released. It's just a finite window in the week. And of course, that's when the biggest news drops. But Mac Jones, indeed, given the starting job as a rookie right out of the gate. So the era begins. I just breathed a huge sigh of relief. I'm ready to roll, put the kid in. It tells me that Bill has some real supreme confidence in this kid. And Cam Newton, just, you know, with the COVID distractions and him being unvaccinated and him not knowing the playbook as well as Mac, and just kind of taking a really lackadaisical approach to everything this summer, it led me to believe that Bill was like, listen, I need a guy that I know is going to be reliable and available and ready to go. And he went with the kid. It was crazy.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a bad decision if you're going to go with Mac Jones to just cut Cam Newton and get him out of there and get that distraction gone from...
Oh, dude, him as a backup? Can you imagine him being a backup? He would be the least supportive backup in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, be the worst.
But let's get to our NFL headlines. We like to preview these every year as we head into the season starting this weekend. First, I'm going to make fun of myself because I hopped on here in the NFL preview with my buddy Anthony last year, and my bold take, Mike, for 2020 was the Tampa Bay Bucs would suck. Tom Brady would not be a fit. They would go 7-9 and miss the playoffs. Yeah. How did that work out for me?
Not very well. I believe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Tom Brady as their quarterback won a Super Bowl and are pros to win another one again this year entire
they're
team returning.
In the driver's seat to win another one potentially, Mike. Yes. They really are. 44-year-old Tom Brady is going to get that seventh ring Thursday night. How about them apples? Huh?
I think he wants more rings than he has fingers. So at this point, the best solution to get him to stop winning is to cut off some fingers.
Love that. So Tom Brady marches on. I'll give you a little hypothetical that I want to talk about. You can either take four teams, Mike, to win it all this year, or you can take the field and the rest of the league. I'm giving you four teams. Do you think the champion will come out of maybe Buffalo with Josh Allen, the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, Brady and the Bucks, or Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers? Do you think one of those four teams can get it done, or are we going to see a surprise champion this year?
I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to get it done. He's one of the most frustrated quarterbacks in the league that has a team because, you know, Cam Newton is probably the second most frustrated quarterback. And he doesn't have one anymore. So, but of those other three teams, I like their chances. So I'm going to go ahead and take those four.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to bet against either Brady or Mahomes coming out of their conference, respectively. I'm not sure how I feel about the Bills. I will say that's the bold take I'm going to put down on pen and paper right now for the season is I agree with you. We can tell Aaron Rodgers is frustrated, and it's not really such a bold take, but I think the Packers are going to be a mess this year. You know, a lot of people just assume that they're going to walk to 10, 11, 12 wins just because of who's at their quarterback, but there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes right now in that organization that bothers me tremendously. I don't think the Packers are even making the postseason this year. I'm looking at maybe an 8-9 win, 500 team-ish. So that's definitely my bold take for the year. I don't know if you have any thoughts on your Giants at all. I mean, you're in such a weird limbo with Daniel Jones now as we enter year three. But, I mean, do you hold out any hope for the beginning of the season? Usually I can get a few weeks out of hope for you before you start tanking things. But where do you sit as we head into the new year?
You know, hope is such an interesting word. Yeah. It really encapsulates a lot of different feelings, none of which I'm currently holding for my Giants.
All right, there you go. So 4-13, maybe 5-12 it is. I think that's your
opinion. Yeah, I'm going for first pick in the draft. That's what I'm going for.
Yeah, remember, we're playing 17 games now. Extra long season.
That's even worse.
Yeah, 17 games. Ends. And we've been highlighting the Cowboys and Hard Knocks. Let's talk about last week's episode a little bit, too. I want to talk about their season in general, but a couple of funny notes from this past week's Hard Knocks. Jaquan Hardy, we talked about him as the contact lens guy who was wearing the rec specs. He ate some Southern soul food at a restaurant in last week's episode. Mike, I know you're big into the Southern food ever since you moved to Georgia. It's part of your life, whether you like it or not. What are your favorites, like Southern soul food? I'm talking fried chicken, the fixings, the sides, desserts. What do you usually go for?
You know, I haven't done a lot of fried chicken, kind of in general, but shrimp and grits. There's just something special about shrimp and grits.
Yeah,
it really is.
That's a good call. I did not see that on their spread specifically, but that was good to see. I love that food. And then the other shout out I got to do is Jerry Jones. We famously documented him putting salt on his McGriddle sandwich. Okay.
Yeah.
So not only is Jerry Jones a billionaire that puts salt on his McGriddle sandwiches, he also confessed last week, Mike, that he goes to Whataburger, not himself. He has his assistant go and get it for him. Give me a guess. How many times a week do you think Jerry Jones demands his assistant goes and get him Whataburger?
I'm thinking 4 to 5 times a week.
Yeah, 5. You nailed it. Five meals a week for Jerry Jones and Whataburger.
So here's the thing about Whataburger. If there's one thing I miss about living in Texas, it is Whataburger. It was the best thing about living in Texas, hands down.
That's a great tease. We'll come back to that in our Always In With Food segment in a little bit. Yeah. But the Cowboys, nonetheless, they're happy to have Dak Prescott back. He had that mind-blowingly horrifying injury. Remember, his leg quite literally snapped off last October. He is back 100%. I'm curious to see if they can get over the hump, get back to the postseason this year with a quarterback that can actually carry them. So that's what we're looking forward to this year in the NFL. Just want to touch on some quick storylines, but it all gets going Thursday night with those Cowboys and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and defending Super Bowl champion Tom Brady at age 44. Well, what a world.
It'll be great. What also was great, this was past weekend, because you started your Texas tailgate tour at Texas State and Baylor playing, and you had some press passes. You had some great shots from on the field at the ends of the end zone there. It looked great.
Yeah.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the worst football experience of all time, yeah, 10 being you just watched the Patriots win the Super Bowl and you stormed the field, how did this rate in terms of football experience?
I'm going to give it a 9. I'm going to take 0.5. I'm going to take 0.5 away because the Texas State Bobcats could not pull out the win. They came damn close. They covered the spread, thankfully, so I appreciate that. And I'm going to take 0.5 away only because I didn't quite find that massive, smoking barbecue pit that I was looking to find pregame. I took a lap around the stadium. There was some awesome partying, a really great tailgate scene. There was a lot of different food out there, but I didn't quite find that beck and call barbecue smoking pit that I wanted to. Nonetheless, that's a really cool experience at Texas State. I know you can appreciate this knowing schools like Georgia Southern and places that you've seen over your day going to different smaller colleges. It's fun to be at a smaller school and be at that environment where, you can really feel that this fan base absolutely cares about their local team. Not something you quite get at a bigger school or a big time program. That really was appreciated. That shined through. So shout out to my friends at Texas State Athletics for giving us that access too. It was cool to be on the field and get that perspective.
And you can check your Instagram, Alex, to see everything you did there, Course of Life.
Yes,
Alex.
And also the YouTube video. I'll be sending that your way to put up later this week. So if you search Course of Life podcast on YouTube, I'm going to put up a whole highlight video of the entire day, the first stop of the Course of Life tailgate tour, and we'll keep it going next month here in Austin.
It's going to be great. But for now, let's hashtag Always In With Food.
Yes, brought to you by our friends at Tosi Bites, makers of the Tosi Super Bites. I love them. It's my 9th, 10th tea snack every single round I go out on the course. Not just great for golfers, too. Anyone who works out just needs a quick energy booster, any sort of healthy snack to get them through their day. Our promo code is COL20 for 20% off, or you can head to tosi.com/COL. You mentioned it. You miss Whataburger. You mentioned this a lot too. You really do harp this, how much you love that place.
So actually, when I left Texas, my coworkers got me a Whataburger gift bag. It was a Whataburger shopping bag, 2 bottles of Whataburger ketchup. They're original and they're spicy. A Whataburger t-shirt was in there as well. I still use that shopping bag. T-shirt's a little tight on me, and I obviously used up all the ketchup already. That went pretty fast.
I know what I'm sending you for your birthday. This is exciting.
Oh yes!
Wow!
I'm so excited now.
November can't
you
come
can literally send me a whole lump of coal now, but I'm just the excitement about what could happen is great.
Yeah, I'm spoiled. I got 2 Whataburgers within 3 miles of me, so it's a pretty much a weekly order for us.
I've got one 2 hours south of me in Jacksonville. I haven't been there.
Make a day trip of it. But I got something I hadn't gotten in a while. I messed around with all sorts of burger and chicken sandwich concoctions, but I know you're a patty melt guy, and I hadn't got the Whataburger patty melt in
it's
years.
Good.
Oh, it's good. Good. It's worth it.
It is
if
good.
You ever get to Whataburger, you can go a little bit askew off the traditional burger and go for the patty melt.
You know, when we when I came out for your wedding a couple of years ago, with my freshman year roommate Doug,
yes,
go Doug.
Right.
We were leaving the airport. And it was like, it was lunchtime. It was like, we're hungry. We're going to go to lunch. I'm like, do you care where we go? He's like, no. I was like, good, because we're going to Whataburger. And we immediately went to Whataburger. He had his first Whataburger experience.
Oh, that's nice. You gave that to him. So, that's a great moment there.
Everyone needs to experience Whataburger.
Good everyone. Stuff. What was your food item of the week here?
So as I said earlier, we got some friends spending the weekend, and that means we can bake something a little more extravagant because we're going to be people there to eat it with us. The wife made a blackberry and apple butter pie bar.
Wow. Blackberry and apple butter. How do those? I don't think I've quite eaten a berry and apple dessert before. Yeah. How do those flavors combine?
This was fantastic. It's phenomenal. It is now, it's going to be what we make for Thanksgiving as well.
You know what? That does have very Thanksgiving vibes as well, too.
The blackberries may be a little too summery.
Blueberry summery. Yeah. Switch the berry out there. Okay. Yeah. That's something to note down for November. Love that. Good stuff. That's hashtag always end with food. Again, thank you to everyone for joining, not only listening here at Course Life, but check out the Always End with Food podcast as well. It's Always End with Food Pod on Instagram. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll be back next week. We'll be right back.